Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. Hey everyone, welcome back to Absurdity. Today we are back. Tony and I are back, and this time we're not talking about Adventist stuff. So to my entire audience, welcome back to Standard Absurdity, where we talk about greater issues. So Tony, thanks for coming back. And though you get absolutely no credit other than in episode descriptions and in posts on Facebook and Instagram, know that I appreciate you and love you and care about you.
You have to be careful. By the time this airs, that might be happening.
Nope, not happening. This is never going to become Absurdity with Ryan Becker and Tony Anoboli.
Absurdity with Ryan and Tony, I think that works.
Nope, it doesn't. I'm sorry. You know why it doesn't work?
With Roni?
No, you know why it doesn't work? Because it means that it means that some of the attention would be taken off of me.
That's fair.
All the spotlight, Tony.
What was the name we gave it? It was something with Becker. It wasn't Ryan. It was like Roni or something. Sorry, it wasn't Ryan. It was Becker. So it was like Tucker or like our mixed name. Like if it was Brangelina or Bennifer. It was something along the lines of like, yeah. You remember that? Don't you remember
Roni
that?
Roni or Tyen or, yeah.
No, it was with Becker. That was the thing. It was like Becker and Tony, and it was so weird. Or maybe it was like Bonobili or...
Bonobili? That sounds racist somehow.
No, it was Beck...
I don't remember what it was.
Beckbili or something like that, yeah.
Okay. Well, we tried.
Anobiker, yeah.
All right, so to the 10 of you that are still here, thank you for sitting through that.
Hi, guys. Hear us, for we have spoken.
So about 10, 11, 12 episodes ago, somewhere around there, we talked about mental health we talked about suicide, and today will be no different. But before we do that, two quick plugs, it's just going to be like this for about the next month. So just hang in there with me. First is for Patreon. Please help us out with Patreon and support us. Even a dollar every month helps. I know I sound like a broken record, but it really does help keep the lights on in here. So please, please, please consider donating to the Patreon, patreon.com/absurditypodcast. There are different tier rewards, and I'm currently revamping some of those reward levels. But every dollar goes right back into this podcast. It's what helps us improve things and get the word out. Right now, we are probably the second largest Adventist podcast out there, other than Adventist History Podcast with Matthew Lucio. So we're going to keep trying and keep growing. And one day, Matt, I will beat you. So just know that. That's my goal in life, is just to win, win, win. No, I'm just kidding. I love you, Matt. But yes, that is, we are trying to grow this and make this better for you. So please consider donating financially and supporting this that way. The other thing, young adults 18 plus will be, having a conference December 28 through 30. I am on the docket for doing a breakout session for that, but Alan Martin is speaking. It's in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah. I was going to say last time when we made this plug, we didn't really mention where it was. So it's in Charlotte.
No, I said Charlotte. I said Charlotte.
Oh, did you? Sure. Oh, I missed it then. Yeah. I'm just done.
But yes, so Charlotte, North Carolina, December 28th through 30. Consider going out. Registration is not that much. So it is pretty cost effective, but we would love to have you out there. And we are hoping to do more for young adults across America. So awakennc.com, and there'll be a link in the show notes. All right, let's jump into this, Tony, shall we? Let's talk about mental health.
Jump.
Let's talk about
jump.
Counseling and asking for help. That's where we're at.
Jump, jump, jump.
So let's jump into this. Tony, why do you think there is a, and this is true, there is a stigma attached to counseling, to getting counseling, to getting therapy. So we're gonna dive right into this. And tonight we're gonna get a little real. I know that when Tony kind of brought this up, I decided that I was going to be pretty transparent about some of this
here.
Stuff too.
Yeah.
So, Tony, let's go with this. Why do you think there's a stigma attached? Yeah, absolutely. Why is there a stigma attached to counseling?
Man, there's so many reasons for this. I think generally there's a stigma because there is this sense that if you go to counseling, you're crazy. Like, counseling is for people who are cannot function in society. You know, it's funny. So a couple of reasons why I came up with the idea for this. I'm taking a class right now called Counseling Youth and Young Adults. And the actual class itself, like the class period, is about counseling. In fact, when people were complaining to the PhD student who's teaching it, because it's a grad level course. So, you know, the PhDs teach you sometimes as well. They were complaining to him about it. And he goes, are you doing your reading? Because the reading is where you get the information. This class is about counseling each other. It's, you know, it's about actually getting together and learning how to be counseled and to counsel. It's not about learning techniques or information. And that was so interesting to me because so often when we talk about counseling, it really is that. It's this informational concept of like, well, if I just give you the correct information, you will be okay. And that's not what it's about. And I think that's another stigma that's attached to it. It's like counseling is for people who don't have the correct amount of information or all of the skills to be able to manage in society. I think the other stigma that's attached to it is counseling. People who go to counseling have to admit that they're broken. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge stigma to admitting that you're broken in Christianity.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think in the human condition, but I think the secular, and this is, it's funny to me because I don't like separating Christianity and secular. Like, we're all part of this, but the reality is the secular world, because there is a Christian culture, the secular world does a much better job of being transparent about things. Like, you look at the Me Too movement and things like this, like they're talking about issues that the church should have been addressing way back. Like, the church should have been in the forefront of the Me Too movement, not Hollywood.
Well, it is on the forefront of the Me Too movement now, to some extent.
Well, now.
No, I mean, like, it, in I don't
accusing,
mean.
Yeah, in a negative way. Yeah, yeah.
No, that's what I meant, yeah.
I'm with you with that. But I think the other thing that when it comes to a negative stigma that I attach, that comes to it, is a weakness. And we talked about this with mental health. Like, you're weak if you go to counseling. Mm-hmm. So I think those are all kind of the negative stigmas that are attached to that and why we have those negative stigmas, because you're weak, you can't handle it, you can't hack it. I don't know. Why do you think?
No, I actually think this is anecdotal. I don't have any stats to back this up. I haven't read about it, but I do think that there is less of a stigma in more progressive and more urban environments.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
So you know, you go out west, California on the coast, you go to New York City, places like that, I imagine that counseling and therapy is...
big cities too, so like Dallas and Houston. Yeah, just big cities in general,
yeah.
Yeah.
But the more conservative and traditional you get, regardless of your religion, you still end up with a more negative stigma about counseling. And I'd agree. I think people don't like to admit we're broken. I think there's a misunderstanding of what counseling is, what its purpose is. I think there is. And like, the thing I love about counseling or therapy is it's not meant for you if you're just broken. It's meant for you to stay not broken. you know, if everything's fine, it's a way to make sure that you're staying fine. But yeah, there's this stigma because there's misunderstanding. And part of that was probably brought on by media, by popular, you know, stereotypes in media and portrayals in media that did not lend any sort of help to the credibility and possibility of counseling. But yeah, I think that's a big part of it, is just a misunderstanding of what it is and what it does. So that's kind of where that's where I would kind of land.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. There's this false picture that America is this place where you, you know, build yourself up by your own bootstraps. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's this false memory that we've created. I mean, similar to cowboys, like, you know, 80% of all cowboys were, you know, blacks and Mexicans. But it's become this, oh yeah, there were all these white guys riding around. It's like, no, that was something that was created by Hollywood in the 1920s. Yeah. Like, if you ask most of the actual cowboys, yeah, they were all like, you know, Juan and Jose and, you know, Leroy, you know what I mean? Like they was not yeah. white guys. It was the majority, but that's the stigma that we've created. It's the false memory, revisionist history that we've created for ourselves. And I think that same thing is attached to a lot of this American thing, this Americanizing of a good American, someone who pulls himself up by their bootstrap. They don't need help. They don't need anything. They go to God because they choose to, not because they have to as a crutch. And that's the problem that's the real problem that I see, as far as the fact that, like, we're creating, we've created a sense. Now, I think the other reason why it has some negative stigmas attached is that people don't understand the difference between counseling and therapy. So we're going to talk about, like, psychotherapy, like, the difference and what it is, and, like, psychoanalysts and, like, kind of, like, I'll go a little bit into the history of that. But that's for later. Like, right now, so we talked a little bit about it. Ryan, have you experienced any fear or negative feedback or just, like, stigma attached to like, counseling?
Experienced it for, like, experienced people pushing against me for pursuing
you,
it?
You or maybe just yourself?
No one has ever, you know, looked at me odd for pursuing it. I've only pursued it one time. I'm currently looking for some, but I've only pursued it one time. It was a few years ago, and I was looking for some counseling help to overcome pornography addiction. And I found a guy about 30 minutes or so away from Southern in Cleveland, Tennessee, associated, I think, with Lee, maybe not. I'm not trying to, like, I don't want to put this on Lee University, not at all. But it was up in Cleveland near that area. And so I met with this guy a few times, and he was, you know, traditional Hellfire Brimstone Baptist, which is fine. Except for we got about three sessions in. I'm talking about my problem. I'm telling him my journey. And quick context, for those of you who have only heard my voice on this podcast, don't know anything about me, you need to know that my dad died when I was 17. He had a heart attack, suddenly passed away. He was found and pronounced dead on the scene. So, right. So there was no big fight. There was no hospital stay. He just died. All right. Now, I know that was really depressing, but you need to understand that for what I'm about to say next. I remember sitting in about third or fourth session, and he says, "Ryan, I, you know, I want to make something really clear here, because you've been experiencing, I'm 21 at this time." He says, "You know, you've probably felt a lot of guilt over this, a lot of shame over this, and I want you to know this is not your fault." Now, because of the context I just gave, as many of you have probably figured out where this is going, he proceeds to say, "This is not your fault. This is your dad's failure to parent you properly. And this is your dad's fault. And he is standing before God in judgment for his failure to protect you, to parent you right. And this is his fault that you are in this mess. It is not your fault."
Which goes against scripture, by the way. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's like, yeah. I will not hold the sins of the fathers against the son, you know. But yeah, like beyond the fact that that's not okay, like that's not even biblical.
No. Well, and here's the thing. Like, in the moment, I was so shocked. I didn't know what to do. I just never went back to the guy, nor did I ever pay for that session. But, he didn't push the fact that I didn't pay it. I think he knew. But, like, what got me was, like, sure. When I was, like,
walked away, told him.
The fact that, okay, maybe I had too much unsupervised time on the computer. Or maybe you know what I mean? Like, as a kid, sure. I'm 21 now. This is on me. You know what I mean? Like, this is not on him, no matter what you want to say. This is on me. And that's why I'm here trying to fix this, is because I'm trying to own my problems. And so, like, there was fear that I had, and that fear was very much realized. And I don't share that story to discourage anyone from getting counseling, but I also don't want anyone to go into counseling think that it's going to be a perfect match right off the bat. Sometimes it's not the first doctor you go to is the perfect doctor. My mom went to a doctor, I think, and they took x-rays of her lungs and thought that she had pneumonia. 2 months later, we find out she has lung cancer, and they missed the tumor on the original x-rays when it would have been stage one, and now it's stage four. You know, that was my senior year. My mom's alive now. We're good. But, like, sometimes it takes a couple counselors to get it right. Sometimes it takes a couple doctors to get it right. That's okay.
I think one of the big things about counseling as well is, it should don't look for an immediate effect. But also, if it's not working, it's not working. That's how you know counseling isn't working, when it's not working.
And you just kind of know.
Yeah. And you know, like, it's not working for you. This is the other thing. When we were talking in this class, they were saying, you know, what's the ultimate purpose? It's not to heal them. It's not to, you know, it's to give them the tools to, well, we'll talk about that a little bit when we get, but it's to give people tools to be able to fix things in their life, or to access ways to fix things in their life. And it's like, how do I say this? Like, if it's not working, you're doing it wrong as a counselor. Like, that's on you as a counselor. None of them. I mean, if they're not, like, if the client, that would be us, is not doing what you're doing, you know, they're not doing their homework or whatever. I mean, it's like music, you know what I mean? Like, you're never going to learn the song unless you practice it. Or Mozart, who needed counseling, a lot of counseling. But like, that's the thing, is like, if you're not participating in it or putting in the effort, yeah, you're not going to get anything out of it. But at the same time, if you're putting in the effort and nothing's happening, you might need to switch counselors.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, look, bottom line, like with counseling, there is a fear too of, like, I have a fear right now. This is one of the things I agreed to be real on, is the fear is that I didn't have enough time to process the grief that happened to me my senior year. And I am afraid of what is there. I'm afraid of what is unprocessed. And actually this past
opening that box.
Yeah. Opening up that box is really scary. But I know I need to, because if not, and here's the kicker. I had thought of it this way, which is why I eventually went to counseling for pornography too, but I'd never really articulated it this way until I saw it in a Reddit comment, actually. And this is the most profound Reddit comment I've ever encountered. And Reddit, I wish I had saved it. But it was someone asking about counseling. And this is what pushed me over, right? Everyone sees counseling as this thing that is this scary thing, or this thing that's going to tell you you're broken or whatever, right? All the negative stigmas. But ultimately, the reason that I want to go to counseling is so that my future wife, my future family, my future friends, my current friends don't have to deal with the grief that I haven't processed. And ultimately, going to counseling, if you have something that's going on, if something is going wrong, going to counseling or therapy is the greatest act of service that you can do for your friends.
Yeah.
Because and family. Because your friends and family are there to, yes, walk through life alongside you, be there for you, but their job is not to specifically help you work through those problems. And what we do is we end up relying so much on our friends, and then we wonder why our friends pull away. It's because they don't have the training, they don't have the tools, they don't have the emotional energy to continue investing in our lives. And so friends pull away because they just don't know what to do. But when you go to counseling, you're going to someone who is trained. It's literally their job. Like, right? It's literally their job. And their entire purpose in your life is to help you through whatever it is that you're going through. That's their entire purpose. And they don't complain about it. They are happy to do it. That's why they dedicated their lives to doing it. Like, that's amazing news that I can have someone in my life that is completely dedicated to helping me succeed and get through this difficult time. And someone who has the tools, the knowledge, and the training to actually do it well.
Yeah, that's, I think, huge. That's the key part, is they actually have training in it. And again, that doesn't mean that just because you have training doesn't mean you're good at it, A, or B, that you use that training correctly, you know, B. At the same time, anyone who's ever done it, let me put it this way. Who would you trust to actually fix a cavity in your tooth? A dentist or your friend Bob, who has had cavities in his tooth before? Now, Bob might understand the process.
What if Bob is the dentist?
No, Bob is not a dentist.
Oh, okay.
He's just your friend Bob, who, right? Bob might even have rudimentary dental skills because he's he makes crowns, you know what I mean? Or whatever, but he's not a dentist, you know what I mean? Or a dental assistant, a dental technician, whatever you want to call it. Like, he's not. Who do you want rooting around in your mouth? Or better yet, let's put it this way. Better yet, who do you want doing a colonoscopy?
Fair. Who do you want doing surgery?
A guy who enjoys sticking cameras up your colon? Yes. Or a doctor? And those might be the same, but the doctor at least has training.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right.
Well, and here's the thing too. Like, if you're going into surgery, who do you want opening you up? Someone who knows what to look
open
for?
Open heart, yeah.
Do you want someone, like, there was actually, all right, now this is going to be bad, but this actually goes along with our point still. There was a surgeon recently who accidentally removed a kidney from one of his patients instead of a tumor. Like, he thought it was a tumor. And it was because the patient had a rare condition where the kidney was in the wrong spot. And he thought it was a part of a tumor. Now, to be fair, that still brings us to, that still is, I know that almost shot us in the foot, but here's the thing. Not every doctor is as good
not
at what they do.
Not every doctor is as good at what they do.
Sometimes it takes a couple. Granted, you can't put a kidney back in, but absolutely you can.
I mean, you can, it just won't work.
Yeah. I mean, you could put it there for a step.
You can stick it back in there.
Do you want a second appendix?
At that point, it isn't. Why do I have back pain? Because he stuck a piece of rotted meat inside you. Yeah.
I think
to me, I think to kind of understand what we're doing, I think we have to understand the difference between counseling and therapy, because that's idea. Counseling is what we're talking about right now. Somebody who's dedicated to help you get through this time, right? A grief counselor or just a marriage counselor, something like that. Somebody who's here to give you tools. A counselor and a therapist are two different things. They're yes. similar, but they are not the same.
Yes, absolutely. And it's like a psychologist and a therapist and a psychiatrist. Thank you. I was going to say psychiatric. Yeah. And I was like, that's not a thing. A psychiatrist who can actually prescribe medications to you, whereas a counselor can't prescribe medications, but they can still help you through your problems.
Yeah.
But they can't actually make a medical diagnosis.
Yeah. A medical diagnosis. And, yeah. No, for sure.
That is the difference.
And they're not trying to, like, a psychiatrist can diagnose and help you, but all psychiatrists are not counselors.
Yes.
So a psychiatrist might not be able to give you the life skills to be able to cope. They can make the voices go away, but not teach you how to live with them.
Yeah.
Or live without them. You know what I mean? That's the difference between a counselor and a therapist. And the other thing we need to talk about is psychoanalysts. A lot of people think counseling is you sitting on a couch having your dreams interpreted. So just so everyone is aware, the idea of psychoanalyzation came from, I almost said Nietzsche. it came from Freud. And Freud believed...
Came from Salvador Dali.
That was more LSD. With a psychoanalyst, they believe that your subconscious, your dreams are reflections of your subconscious, and it's all based on a lot of the repressed sexual desire, all this fun stuff. If you research Freud, you'll find out about it. Basically, this is what Freud had some good ideas, but the problem is he studied what he considered basic humans at a mental ward, a nut house is what they called it back then. And then he was like, this is how the basic human is. And I go, well, of course you're going to see really weird, whacked out things in a nut house. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you went to a place, it's literally called a madhouse. Like, he literally went to a mental institution and found people who were dying, you know, like mentally disturbed, severely mentally disturbed. And then said, well, this is how the every human mind works. So that's the first problem with Freud. The second problem with Freud is that he comes at it from a purely subconscious. Your subconscious has stronger power over your conscious mind. And that's where Jung comes in. He did a lot on that. You have Abraham Maslow and his hierarchy of needs. But what Freud did was basically open the door for the idea that there is something beyond simply our conscious mind. That was his great improvement on this, that our past affects our future and our present. And that's a great concept. It was great. Now, some of the other stuff, he's a little hopped up on coke. Again, do your research. But I think he had some good points. Counseling doesn't believe that your subconscious is stronger than your conscience, but it does go with that idea that there are ways and structures and certain things you can do to help cope with the world around you based on your personality, based on your past experience, based on the trauma in your life, and that if we work with those things from a non-chemical standpoint, right? This is just purely, you know, life, that you can work with those things and get the skills to be able to deal with this on your own. That's what counseling is about. Therapy is that you have, it's beyond that. It's, there is something that is beyond your control that you need help with. So that's drugs for psychology, psychiatrists. That is people who are having like severe nightmares and issues with that. You know, they might want to go to a psychoanalyst or a therapist, you know, to really deal with that severe trauma. That's a therapist thing. That's not counseling won't help with that. You know, therapy, it will, but it won't be as effective as therapy because you have to go through some really drastic, measures, to help with that. So those are two separate things. So separate those out. And I think a lot of the negative stigmas that we get about counseling comes from therapy, ironically. And I'm not saying that therapy is bad either. But I'm saying that everybody needs counseling. And the reason why I want to bring this up, because I believe that everybody is broken. I believe that that's what the Bible tells us. You know, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Every single one of us is broken. And because every single one of us is broken, every single one of us needs help repairing that. And a lot of that is spiritual. But I also think a lot of that doesn't necessarily just have to be spiritual. I think that the Bible has given us ways to be able to learn how to cope with that beyond simply reading the Bible. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
no, it does.
Go ahead.
Okay, but I agree with you. I just think that everyone is broken, and I don't need a biblical reason for that. I just need to look at the world. You know what I mean? Like everyone is adulting, and everyone's figuring it out as they go. No one knows what they're doing. And at least counselors and psychiatrists and otherwise might be trained in recognizing some of the patterns that lead to the personal decisions that you make. You know, they might not be able to make systemic changes in the world to make it a better place. And they don't certainly know everything, and they can't help every single person. You know, one counselor can't help everyone. But certainly I think everyone could use it, because everyone could use a little guidance. No one knows everything. And just having that extra perspective in your life, whose entire, once again, entire purpose is to give you that perspective and to like, it's their entire purpose is to serve you. Like, why are we not utilizing that?
Even, and I was talking to a friend about this who she's been going through a lot recently and dealing with a lot of anxiety and issues like that. And she's like, man, counseling just helps so much. And I go, you know what, beyond even the techniques and everything, even just as a steam release, like a pressure release, you know what I mean? As just a way to vent, counseling is helpful. Just getting it off your chest to a stranger who's not judgmental, who isn't, you know what I mean? Because that's the thing, a counselor's not going to sit there with you and go, I think this is because of tell me about your father. I think he has, no, I mean, they might go to your, I mean, it might be because your dad, you know what I mean? Like it might be because of issues with your father or your mother or whatever. But it's more along the lines of let's make sure you don't feel this way. Let's get this anxiety out. And then we can talk about how to get it not coming back. And that would be dealing with the deeper issues, right? This is a tell me about your childhood kind of a thing. But they're not interested in figuring out the patterns of it. That's more psychology. You know, psychology is how our brains work. Anyway, so the point being that I think it's just really important for us to get that idea that we need that. We all need this. And it brings me to the main point that I wanted to ask about this is like, why is it so hard for Christians specifically, humans, yes, but Christians specifically to ask for help?
Oh man, you made it general. Now I can't make it personal.
Make it personal.
Nope, too late. I want to make it general now. You've made it general. This is safer for me. I don't have to be as vulnerable. I think because of the negative stigma, A, I think it's hard to ask for help. I think B, everyone feels a pressure to succeed, be successful on their own. And here's the other thing too. It's the American dream to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, get to work and be successful, and it all falls on you. And so you needing help, you needing assistance in any way, shape, or form is seen as weakness. It's seen as you're not good enough. In fact, the fact that you need help is admitting you're broken, and you don't want anyone to know you're broken. And it's not even that you may know you're broken. Sure, you might know, but you don't want anyone else to know. And so you just keep bottling it up and you keep dealing with it. And honestly, like, I've been there for a long time. Here, now I can make it personal. Like, one of the things I realized this October about myself, this October was 8 years since my dad died. And it was one of the hardest, one of the hardest like anniversary times that I've had since that happened. And I learned more about myself now looking back over the last 8 years than I had prior. And basically what I learned about myself is I became less of a fly by the seat of my pants kind of guy and more tightly controlled on, you know, any factors that go into a trip or logistics and details. I want to know when we're leaving. I want to know when we're coming back. I want to know all these different things. And the reason is because I have this deep-seated fear of not having control over my life. Because my senior year, I had so much stuff happen to me that I didn't have control over. And in fact, one of the things I get slammed on this a lot is I used to make, and occasionally it still comes up sometimes, I used to make what I would call there's no actual good way to put this, but dead dad jokes. And it was my way of, it wasn't laughing at me for having a dead dad, but it was this way of me kind of raising a proverbial middle finger to the universe, right? Saying, you don't get to control my life, how I react to this. You may get to control circumstances, but you don't get to control how I react. And so yeah. I'm choosing to flip the narrative. And it was a matter of control, and I have this fear of not having it. And for me, like, asking for help is me saying I don't have control over the problems that are in my heart and the grief that I feel, the pain that I feel, all of this, the actual inadequacy that I feel. And like right now I'm sitting, I moved to a much healthier spot here in Collegedale mentally, right? I'm surrounded by people I know, by friends. I have a life now.
Peers.
But man, yeah. This just happened 2 weeks ago. I spent all of Saturday with people. I had church with Sabbath school with people. I had a potluck with a whole huge group of young adults. It's the first time I've had that in 2-3 years. And then at that night I got to go to an EP release show for a great friend and got to see a part of his dream come true and got to experience that with him. And then I got to have a game night with some people I know as well, people I'd reconnected with. Best day I've had in years, honestly, like best day. And the second I walked out the door that night, I felt this terrible shame and guilt and depression come over me like I had just had the worst day ever. All of the goodness, all the happiness and the joy from that day was sucked right out of me. And all I could do was just feel terrible about myself. Like I had messed up, like I was a failure, like I was, and it was that depression coming out of being alone for the last 2 years that still made me feel like I wasn't good enough or that I didn't match up enough. And yes, it's very hard for me to talk about this on this podcast, but I'm also really good at compartmentalizing. So that's why I haven't broken down. But I am afraid. Like, I'm afraid to sit down in front of a counselor, talk about this, and just break down. I don't want to break down. I want to have control. And so I think there is this, it is, I think, a bit about control. And maybe I'm projecting that onto other people. Sure, I maybe a little. But I do think it's about control. We all want to control our own lives. And admitting that we can't is a problem.
I mean, I don't think, yeah, you never want to speak for other people. I think that's a safe place to be, but I think that's a human condition, you know? We went to school. One of our professors mentioned this, you know, all heresy stems out of the need to be in control. All sin stems out of the need to be in control. I mean, you look at the original sin that Satan did. It was, I want to be God. I want to control this. Legalism, what is it? I want to control God loving me. God, you have to love me because I've done all these good things. And you look at, liberalism, the flip side of that, right? I get to do what I want with my life, and then God still gets to love me. I still get to get heaven because God loves me. So I get to live my life the way I want on my terms, and I still get the benefits of being a Christian. All of that, it all stems out of the need to be in control. In fact, that's why Paul was so, he's like, no, you need to die to self, you know? Paul's entire message is one of release, letting go, not being in control, you know, for you are not your own, you know, your body's a temple of God. You're not your own. You've died, you know, you've been crucified. And so I think control, absolutely. I think that is such a real, it's a human condition. You know, we've been wanting to be in control since the garden. since literally Adam and Eve. So yeah, I'm with you on that. I think the other thing for me, since you've been so vulnerable, you know, for me, when I really struggle with depression and anxiety and panic attacks, mine really stems from this really deep-seated young, my trauma all happened at a very early age. And interestingly, one of the things that came up when I was going through counseling was the fact that I hadn't processed all of those things as a young child. I just held them down and kind of put them in the back corner of my head without even realizing it. And then trauma that I went through in high school, I dealt with then. And trauma that I went through as an adult, I dealt with then at that point in that moment. But I hadn't touched any of this stuff. And it was just sitting there in a dusty, dark corner until, you know, a big kind of, I got shook up and it released. It just opened that chest. You know, you just think about this chest, you know, this black, you know, wooden chest that just has its belts over it, right? And it's cinched down tight and it's got all this evil just waiting. And then there's this earthquake and that chest gets broken open and all the evils get loosed upon the earth. And that's kind of what happened. It was like all these repressed things built up. But beyond that, it's not even that as much as I have like a serious inferiority complex that built up from being a young, obnoxious ADHD kid with no friends. Which, yeah, regardless of whether that was true or not, that's how I felt. That's how I remember it. And so I remember being very lonely. I remember not having, you know, everyone, you know, all the movies and books and everything, they always had this best friend, you know, this is Gary, my best friend, or this is Beth, my best friend. I was like, I don't have that. I don't know. What's that like? Mm-hmm. And it, ironically, it wasn't until college when, you know, you and our friend Hillary and Steve, like you guys, it was like, oh, this is what a best friend means. It's like you can completely be yourself around somebody and they not only understand you and have things in common, but they love you for who you are, you know, not because you can give something to them or you bring something to the table, but rather because of who you are as an individual. And so because it took me so long to get there, that idea that I'm not good enough, that I have to work twice as hard, or if I don't see something as going to come out with an outcome that I feel I'm capable of, I'll quit. Like I'll quit a project if I don't think it's going to be perfect. It might still be if I put the effort in, but if I just simply sense that, well, I don't think this is going to be as good as it could be, I just quit.
Well, thanks for not quitting Absurdity yet.
Yeah, no, because I think it's amazing and great. And mostly it's because my name's not on the cover. So if this goes horrible, no one will know.
That's true. That's fair.
That's all Ryan back. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who's this?
I'll have to
delete a few episodes from
that Ryan guy sucks. He's the worst.
That Ryan guy. No, but like, you know, for me, I think that's that big, deep seated pain that comes from as a child not dealing with that trauma. And so for me, yeah, when I went to counseling, I definitely experienced that idea of it's so hard to ask for help because sometimes you don't even know you need help.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I didn't know I needed help until the wheels came off.
And I think that's big too. Like, it's a really good mentor of mine shared a time where, her husband was dealing with, was reeling from the loss of his dad. And she told me, and Tony, you know who this person is. She told me that one day she was walking through Target and she lost her husband. She didn't know where he was, so she went searching. Turns out he had seen some random toy in an aisle and had picked it up. And when she rounded the corner, she just found him weeping in an aisle at Target, because grief just hits you at the most unexpected times. And it was this instance of like, yeah, no one knew they needed help. And I think that's what counseling can do too. It can either confirm that, yeah, things are going pretty good for you, or maybe there is something that you don't know about.
Yeah.
That could be impacting things. Like I have this huge need of, for me, and I'm starting to recognize this, and maybe it's wrong. Maybe when I go to counseling and find someone here, then that'll change. But I have this huge need for external validation. My Enneagram type is a type 3. It's the performer. And external validation is huge to me. And I hate that that's a thing. Like, I feel actual more shame. I
really
think
you did a good job saying that. I really want to just validate that you said that really well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I have this constant need to feel enough. And so what ends up happening is in my relationships, I end up doing all these extra stuff that I don't need to do. And I end up doing it way too quickly because I want them to see me as enough. And I want to, and here's the thing, I want them to, by my performance, see that I'm enough before they get to know the flaws, right? I want to be good enough before they get to know who I am, that when they get to know who I am, they're willing to overlook it because of all the good I did elsewhere. And I don't, it's not an intentional thing. I don't sit there and go, yeah, I'm going to do this. It's just a pattern that I've noticed in myself. But I didn't notice it until now. And so
you start peacocking.
And it's frustrating and it's angering. And I feel like I can't stop myself from overperforming and from trying to do all these things. And sometimes I get burnt out in life because I take on too many projects because I'm wanting that affirmation, because I'm craving for someone somewhere to tell me that I'm good enough and mean it and say it without me having to have prompted them to say it. You know what I mean? Like now, if someone who listens to this podcast Ryan, I just want you to know that you're good enough, I'm going to be like, cool, thanks. But
not even that, even if they do say that, you feel like you haven't earned it. So you're like, well, that has to be disingenuous because I didn't do anything deserving of that.
And it's funny because I fully believe that, like, at least cognitively, believe that, yes, I am absolutely good enough in the eyes of Jesus. And yes, I have value and an innate worth because he created me. And I preach that all the time. And maybe it's because I'm trying to make my heart believe it. I don't know. It's another source of shame added in, right? Like, I know where I should be and I can't get there. But asking for, and I don't want to have to ask for help. I want to be able to say, yes, I did this all on my own. And I need to accept that that's not the case. And that's why I'm looking for, I've already accepted it. I just haven't found someone yet. I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with. I know that's my struggle. And all I can really do is speak to my own struggle here. I'm not trying to make this like episode about my struggle, but I think it's also important that people who listen to this don't think that I have it all together. I don't want anyone to think that you have it all together.
I totally have it all together.
I have a perfect beard and perfect hair, but that doesn't mean I have it all together.
Yeah, no, I mean, I am really, really close. No, I absolutely don't. I think that's why we need to talk about it, because I think this is the other thing. We've talked about like mental health and transparency and a lot of the different stuff. But one of the things that to me that I was going through is like, how do we make our churches a safe place where people can go to ask for help? Because, you know, I was talking about this the other day with a friend of mine, again, who's the same one who's going through a lot. And she was talking about how good it was to go to therapy just to feel not, you know, no judgment. And I go, shouldn't churches be that way? And she thought I was saying, like, go to church and just air out your dirty laundry. And I go, no. But that same feeling of I can be my absolute self here and know that I am not, I can't do that outside. I can't do that but I can do this here. Sometimes we can't even do that with our own family. Our blood family, our blood relatives, but I can do this with my spiritual family. I can do this with my church. I can be open and honest and upfront with my absurdity audience. Hear us, for we have spoken. We can do this.
That meme will never die.
Because we know that they are Christians and that because this is my church family, they will not only love me and accept me for who I am, but they will not judge me for my mistakes. And I can come to them and say, I have a drinking problem, or have a sex addiction problem, or I have a video game problem, or I'm just feeling depressed, or I'm feeling anxious, or I'm not good with my finances. I can do whatever and come in, and they're not only going to not judge me, but help me recover and do good. You know, and that's not to say that should replace counseling at all, but shouldn't that be how our churches? So that's my question.
It should be one more addition to positive mental health.
Because every counselor is going to tell you the best way to get over this, the best statistics show this, the best way to get over this is to have a safe community that builds you up.
Yep. So good on Christianity for figuring that one out 2,000 years ago.
So how do we do this? What are some steps we can do to make churches safe?
I know this isn't the bulk of our listeners, though a lot of pastors I know do listen to this. I think it can start with the pastors. One of the things I realized and I hated when I was a pastor and I tried to fight against it as much as possible is pseudo transparency from the pulpit. And what this is, and it's created by our fear of the judgment of members, A lot of jobs have been on this. And honestly, yes, the line between dirty laundry and transparency is very thin. I understand that. But pseudo-transparency is this, and everyone has heard this sermon. It's when the pastor goes, yeah, you know, I'm just like you. I one time was less than happy with my kid. You know what I mean? Like it's this way of us saying, yes, we've sinned, but I can't tell you how badly I've sinned. Otherwise, you wouldn't trust me as your pastor anymore. So I have to give you this thing of like this one time I was.
And then like raise our eyebrows and nod, wink, wink.
Yeah. We can't actually tell you what we did because we're afraid of how you'll receive us. And so I do think to pastors, and this is why I think it's even more important for pastors to have counseling, because you need to be secure enough in your own flaws to be able to talk openly about them if you want people to talk openly with you about what's going on in their lives. And so by having counseling and having therapy and working through that, you can talk about those things and do it well and do it effectively and know what that line is and tread it well in your life, because the line is different for every person. But I think that's part of it, is I think pastors need to start being more transparent about their experiences, and that involves a greater conversation with your church to lead them through how to respond to that transparency and how to respond without judgment. And I get that there are some churches and some pastors where that's just not possible right now. Wholly understand that. Not talking to them.
I thought you were going to be like, holy cow, they cannot share this.
Yeah, they. But that's true. They can't. There are some churches where you can't, you will get eaten alive. I get that. And it's terrible. So, but I do think that's one of the first steps. I think that it can absolutely start with the pastor and church leadership, elders, anyone who actually takes the pulpit. I think that would be where I would start, at least from the church side.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think the other thing which I think would follow up on that is creating a culture. I'm all about culture, man. I'm all about being intentional about what, because your church is going to have a reputation and a culture. You're either going to be the one who controls it. You're either going to be proactive or reactive. That's the difference. Like your church is going to be known for something, and if you're not careful, it's going to be something that's negative. You know, oh, that's the church that, you know, fired the one dude or I mean, not for nothing. Look at Mars Hill. What is Mars Hill known for? Right.
Yeah. Look,
you know, and that's just the reality, is are you proactive or are you reactive? And so for me, I think a lot of times creating a culture in a church, and that does start from the top down, but not always, creating a culture in the church, I think is a huge part of that too, where it's understood. Like for me, another one, and when we talk about this as an example, but for me, I think visitations shouldn't just be done by the pastor. I think visitations should be done by the church. And we've outsourced a job to a professional that should be an environment. You know, I had members come up and like, how come you've never visited me? And I'm like, oh, are you feeling lonely? Are you feeling unneeded? Well, then who have you visited? Who have you blessed? Who have you gone out and seen? Now, if you really need me, I will show up.
Pastor, it's not my job to bless people.
But that's my thing. It's like, if you really need me, I'll show up. Like, call me. I mean, if there's an emergency, if there's a problem, you know, that you feel you can't deal with, call me. Yeah, I have training for that. But if you're just lonely, go visit somebody, because God speaks through you just as much as he speaks through me. And while I'm out visiting you, I'm taking time away from something that could drastically, you know what I mean? Like I'm taking time from other ministries that might need it more than just you to come and visit. Now, that's not to say that pastors shouldn't visit. I'm not saying that, but I am saying that that's the culture mentality. It's the culture of, instead of me doing the work, the pastor does the work. I'm a receiver instead of that. And to me, I think that's part of it too, is changing that culture of I have to come here perfect. And I hate to say it, this is something, because I grew up in churches where you wear suits. You know what I mean? Like you look nice. I hate to say it, but I think one of the bigger things is having a church where people can show up in whatever dress they deem appropriate. Disrespect, because here's the reality, you're not going to disrespect God. There is a way to disrespect God. It doesn't involve how you dress.
It involves fruits and vegetables.
Yes. but to me, I go, when people, and this is what fascinates me, when you have a Wednesday night service and people can show up in just jeans and a t-shirt, maybe not from the front, but at least in the audience, they are so much more willing to open up about their life and be real and give a testimony.
Yep.
I've almost never seen an open mic testimony time with people in church where A, it's real, or B, they talk about their struggles. Never. But you have that with jeans and a t-shirt, man. People will come up and tell you their life story and say, I'm not in a good place right now. I need your help.
Yeah.
Watch. And I go, so for me, I think it's just creating that environment where people feel safe. And it allows that culture. What are you doing? And again, I'm not saying you have to change your church. Maybe you can't do it. Again, maybe you can't. Maybe you're working with a culture in your home church that won't do that. So how can you change that then? It's about that mentality of how can I create a culture that people feel safe, whatever that is.
Yes, exactly. I agree.
I think it starts with you again.
Yeah, and I think beyond that, I think the other thing that churches should be doing is, and I've said this before on this podcast, I think our churches should be building positive relationships with local counselors, therapists, medical professionals, licensed. I think pastors should be doing less life counseling and should be more outsourcing that to people who are professionally trained in that specific environment.
Please say that again for the pastors in the back. Please say that a little bit louder.
Make and people depend on you less, basically. Like that's, make people depend less on the pastor. I think that would be huge to be 100% honest.
You're going to do less damage. Like can't, So another friend of mine came up and was talking about marriage counseling and how much damage control they've had to do in their marriage because they went to a really bad marriage counselor. And she literally said to me, she's like, I think that your marriage counselor should be an actual counselor. And I'm like, well, I think a pastor can do it if they know, but know your skills. If you are not a good marriage counselor, find a good marriage counselor. If you're excellent at it and people come to you and they're like, wow, that was so amazing, go for it. That's your strength. That's God's given you that talent. But outsource it. And beyond that, even regular counseling, like unless you have forget natural talent, but actual training in it, you could do some serious damage.
Yes, absolutely. And I think a lot more damage has been done by pastors, well-meaning pastors, but still pastors. And honestly, I don't care how well-intentioned or well-meaning you are. If you do damage, you do damage.
Yeah.
Something is malicious. Malice is not determined by intent. I cannot say that malice is not determined by intent. As someone who has personally experienced serious mental illness impacting his life in multiple ways, both in and out of the family, malice is not determined by intent. Malice is determined by actions and by ramifications, period. Malice can be determined by intent, absolutely, but is not always.
To quote the great philosopher of our time, Batman, it's not who you are inside, but what you do that matters.
Wow. Was that a Bruce Timm Batman comic, or was that a...
No, that's Batman Begins. That's Nolan. Okay. It's a Chris Nolan, but it's the Nolan one.
It's the Nolan. Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
I'm not gonna be quitting Tim Burton on this. No.
So I think that's a good place to those are some good places to start. I do think a lot of it does. I know I'm putting it on the pastors. So I think the other thing too is how do we make churches safe places to ask for help? The other thing for listeners who a lot of you are just regular old lay members, which is a great thing, and I'm not putting you down for that.
You're the most powerful part of our church.
How you respond to someone who asks for help in your life is incredibly important. And so I would
also say, because this is pretty cool. So a quick shout out, because you don't even know the story. At the year-end meetings, at the NAD year-end meetings, someone came up to my dad, an elderly lady came up and thanked him so much for his podcast that he was on because she enjoyed it so much. And he was this year, just recently. And so I don't know when we're going to post this, but if this goes in chronological order, it was 3 weeks ago. She came up and thanked my dad for that. And what? He very proudly said, that's actually my son. So elderly people are listening to, so to my children at heart.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it was crazy. I was like, it's funny because
almost whoever you are, please reach out. I want to talk to you. Thank you. You're awesome.
She said she loved it. By the way, this is Tony Nobly Jr. I should explain. I'm an MDiv student. I'm 28. At the time in 2018,
5 years later, wow, Tony's 28. That's 28? Crazy.
That is insane.
How did he do it?
It's genetics. No.
And good skincare.
Maybe he's born with it. No, but she mentioned this. So to all of our children at heart listeners, not only do you have value, you are one of the most powerful tools this church has, and you are being vastly underutilized. Go ask a young person for help. Watch how much difference that can do. As a young person, when an older person came and asked me and said, hey, Tony, can you help me with this? I give them a chance to step up for you and watch how they react. Mm-hmm. As a pastor, I would go to my kids, hey, guys, I need your help on this. They would step up. They would do it for me. Now, some of them wouldn't because there were lazy little pieces of, you know, nastiness that I hated. No, I'm kidding. Some of them wouldn't because they're lazy, you know, they're teenage boys. But the majority of them, the vast majority of them, were like, it meant the world to them. It was so cool that they, like an adult and a pastor was asking them, how cool for you, if you are listening, to come up to a young person and be like, you know what? I'm really struggling with this. Can you help me? That is so huge. And watch how they will. Vulnerability starts with you being open and vulnerable to them. Yep. I cannot stress enough the need that our generation, the metamodern millennial and Gen Z generations, need for older mentors.
Yep.
Be the mentor that you never had or the mentor that you did have. You know, go step up, be there for these kids, help them out, because not only are they looking for it, but that might be the reason why they stay in the church, because they're struggling with things. I mean, they are struggling with things and nobody's been open and vulnerable to them. So I think that's another way to do that, that you as an older member or a younger member, whatever, ask them for help. Be proactive about that as well.
One last thing I want to say about this, and then Tony, I'll let you have the last word here if you want to. If not, we can end up what I say. One thing you can do right now is if you're in the car and you're at a red light, or you know, you're about to stop at a rest stop, or you're about to arrive at your destination, if you're out jogging and you have your phone on you, if you're at home, if you're in the shower, I don't know where you are. That one's a little weird. I really hope you're not listening to this in the shower.
I mean, some people have those Bluetooth speakers.
Yeah, I have the Bluetooth speakers. So I would encourage you, pull out your phone right now and text someone or call someone who is either plugged in at your church or someone that you know, and ask them how they're doing, and really ask them how they're doing and see, or find someone who, or think of someone who you know has been going through a hard time and reach out to them and see if they want to talk. And block out some time now. What I don't want to say is, oh, we should all just be, you know, not let people just say good when they respond with how are you. I don't want to do that because everyone forgets. Yeah. If I can give you one concrete thing that you could do right now while you're listening to this episode, is to pull out your phone and reach out to someone now. I think that would be huge. And if you don't know who, one thing you can do is pray and ask the Lord to reveal that to you. Yeah. Usually he does.
Yeah.
Usually whoever it is, it may be a family member, it may be someone you haven't talked to in a long time, and you just say, hey, I don't know why, but I feel compelled to talk to you and reach out. And I just want you to know I'm praying for you. If there's anything I can do for you, you know, is everything okay? Whatever it is, just reach out and let them know that you love them, that you care for them, and that you're there for them. I think that would be huge. And one more piece of advice there. I started doing this for people too. Everyone thinks their issue is the excuse to the if you need to talk about anything rule, right? They think that, oh, yeah, sure, I can talk to you about anything except that thing. You know what I mean? Except for my thing. My thing is too big.
Yeah.
So one thing you can start doing is listing out all the things that are okay for them to talk to you about. Cast a really wide net. Because if you hit their issue, then they don't get that excuse anymore. Because you've expressly given them the okay without actually revealing that you know anything, because you don't. or maybe you do, I don't know, but you've given them the okay to say, yes, I can talk to this person about this problem. So there's something intensely practical that you can do right this second before the episode's even finished.
I really, for a split second, thought you were going to say, pull out your phones and leave us a review for our podcast. That's the best thing. I was like, wow, that was a great segue.
No, that would be terrible. That would be the
that'll
worst.
Help our mental. I mean, that'll help our mental states. Yeah, as you're driving, just pull out your phone. Yeah, right next to a cop. I mean, I think you hit it all. I think the big things I want people to walk away from this is we all need healing. We all need help. God's given us places to get help, and the church should be one of those places. And if you are struggling with something, as we've said in these other episodes, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help. Please don't. And I know it got me through an incredibly, it was one of the things that helped get me through an incredibly dark time. Prayer, the Holy Spirit, a good community, support, and counseling helped me get through and an amazing amount, a ridiculous amount of scripture helped me get through one of the darkest times of my life. And it was a dark, dark place. Because God ultimately wants to bring healing to everybody, to you, to the people in your church, and the way he has no hands but ours. He's given us the privilege of being able to help bring that healing process. And so be proactive about it. Go out, be proactive about what your church is being known for. And is it a place of healing? Is it a place of refuge, a place where people come and feel safe and can know that these things that they're struggling with, they have hope and light at the end of the tunnel? Or is it the place where they have to hide those struggles and pretend and deal with them on their own? I was listening to a series on relationships recently by Michael Todd, fantastic series. If you don't know, he's a pastor at Transformation Church in Tulsa. And one of the things he mentioned in that sermon series is the thing that God, that Satan can isolate, he can also destroy. And so that's why the enemy wants to isolate us from each other. Don't let that happen. Go out, reach out, talk to somebody. Don't expect instant results. Just like with counseling, you know, it may take some time to build into people. They may need to see that you are truly investing in them, but do that because I think it'll just make a world of difference.
Yep. Could not agree more. Let's end on that. I think that's a good place to end. And you know, if you're in a place where you need help, please reach out to someone that you trust. If you don't trust anyone, then reach out to us. And we'll do what we can. I can't make any promises, obviously. But reach out to us and I'll try and do what I can. Tony will try to do what he can. In fact, I'm going to put that first before the subscription stuff. You can email me, ryan180becker@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter, at ryan180becker, or Tony's Twitter is tony_Anobly. And then, Tony, if you want to provide an email or something that they can reach out to, that's
fine. Yeah, absolutely. You can get a hold of me at antonioa@andrews.edu. That's Antonio, antonioa@andrews.edu. Yeah, email me. I try to check it every single day. I might not. And like I said, my DMs alert me right away. So yeah, if you get on, you know, just it really quickly just set up a Twitter account. You can access it even from a laptop and just send me a DM or on Facebook, you know, Facebook Messenger. You know, we want to help you guys out too if you're struggling with something, even if you just want to, you know, talk and have an ear.
Yep.
You know, we are the church. We are the church body. You know, we're talking about unity a lot recently. This is one of the ways we're unified is just by helping each other out.
Yep. And to our mental health counselor friends, if you heard something here that was especially dangerous or harmful.
Or contact us anyway, because we want to hook you up with people. Oh, yeah. Like we want to be able to know.
Also if we can correct anything, please let us know. If I need to pull this episode for some terrible reason, please let me know too. And I would love to hear from you too. I know of someone already that I'm going to reach out to after this and ask if they want to be on the show, but for sure. Anyone listening to this, you're welcome to be on. If you're in that sphere, we'd love to talk about this more for sure and get some experts in here too. But with that, if you want to subscribe to Absurdity, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, any other podcatching app. If you do subscribe to us on iTunes, please leave a review. Reviews help us, not just ratings, but reviews as well. Both help, honestly. But
we're good with both.
Ratings and reviews. You can find us on theabsurdity.org. Let's do both.
Both is good.
Theabsurdity.org, patreon.com/absurditypodcast to support us financially. And just thank you guys so much for being a part of this journey with us. I know that this podcast has been therapeutic for me, not just this episode, but like this podcast played a huge role in helping me survive the isolation of the last couple of years. So I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for all of you being on this journey with us. You know, we love this. We love doing this. Tony, thank you for being a part of this as well. I love this. I'm so privileged to be able to do this every week.
Absolutely, man. Sure. I feel the same way. So.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.